Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Livonia, Michigan, and his dad died when he was 4 years old. After earning a Bachelor of Business Management degree from Western Michigan University, he became a world-class salesperson. In 2001, he was selected as a contestant on Survivor 2, the Australian Outback, and he's given 2,000 speeches to over 8 million people. His autobiography is entitled Fireproof. His name? Mike Scoopin. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Rasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Mike Scoopin, who became famous in Survivor 2 in 2001. Mike, welcome, an honor to have you.
It's awesome being here, Jack.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
You know, I grew up in Livonia, and my father, unfortunately, passed away of cancer in 1966. My mother had a five-year-old, a four-year-old, which was me, a three- and a two-year-old, and no life insurance. And, I think my mom's one of the living saints today. She raised us. She had $300 a month from Social Security, and $120 of it was the house payment. So on $180 a month. Now, my mother, I still to this day question why she did it. She worked full-time at the Catholic school rectory at St. Damien's in barter for four kids' private education, because private education was always important to her and my father. And so she worked every day for nothing. So she still only had the $180 a month. And My quote to my mom always is, I love you to death because I never knew I was poor. I never once ever thought I didn't have the most spectacular childhood ever with nothing.
What are the biggest things that mom taught you?
You know, it's hard to say what she taught, because she just lived it. She's one of those people that just live it every day. And when I look at today, how everybody's had to tighten their belt and live with less and do without, that's the story of my whole life growing up. I never had it. I never had a brand new article of clothing until I was a senior in high school. And when people are living different lives today because of the economy, it's the way that I've lived my whole life. So mom always taught us to love people no matter what they were, no matter what circumstances, because we were one of the people that got looked down upon, possibly.
This might seem an odd question, Mike, but what lasting positive effects have you had based upon your dad dying when you were four?
The stories about my dad, when I run into people, which I still run into people that knew my father, he was an incredible man. And there was a song by a group called Bread, and it would, you know, I would give everything I own just to have him back again. And I always used to sing that as my mantra. I always thought he was looking out for me, but I always thought if somebody talked about me after I died the way that they talk about my father, I led a successful life. Not successful monetarily, because we never had much, but boy, did people love that man. And if I could have a fraction of anybody say that about me, I did. I made a good mark here.
You and Karen have seven children, Mike.
Yes.
If there's a dad listening tonight who's feeling a little guilty about not spending enough time with the kids, what do you say to that dad tonight?
You know, people say you got to spend quality time with your kids. And that's always been kind of a cliche out there. And I think it's quantity. I really believe that your kids just need to know you're there. I've coached 47 seasons of sports with my children. And it's just, it's the time when you're working, when you can't spend with them, but you can spend that whole time with them at night and on weekends. So I don't think I've ever missed a practice or a game with my children, and it's been an incredible thing. But in this, in these times, we have to win for our kids. And I looked at my kids when things really got tight and said, you're not going to see me as much because I'm going to keep this roof over your head, and I'm going to keep a car in the driveway, and I'm going to keep food on the table. I've got to do what it takes. It's not optional for me. And so you can show kids love in many, many different ways, but winning for your family financially is also a way to show love for them, especially with the changing times.
Mike Scoopin, you go to Western Michigan, you get a degree in business management. How did you ever get into sales?
It's interesting because people, kids today know what they want to do when they're freshmen in college. I graduated, I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I went with the first company that offered me a job. I never had a paycheck, and we grew up with nothing. So when the first company offered me a job, I said, I'm going to work. And my boss said, give 8 to 5 to the customer. Don't pick up your dry clean. Don't have lunches with your friends. Don't goof off during the day. And I was just silly enough to listen to him. And I didn't develop the bad habits that people did today. And I worked hard, and I found a lot of success just by giving those 8 or 9 hours a day fully to my job.
You work for 3M. The Harris Lanier Copier Division. They have 7,000 salespeople, Mike Scoopin. And for 3 years in a row, you were the number one salesperson. How?
Competitive. You know, I started selling. I remember being in my second month, and I hadn't sold anything. And I looked at my boss, and I said, I've made hundreds of calls and dozens of presentations. I haven't sold it. He said, keep doing it. It's numbers. It's numbers. It's numbers. And in my third month, I sold 16 copiers, which was just unheard of in my third month in the business. And once I found that success, I knew I could just keep repeating it. And anytime somebody else got close, I would just work harder. I remember my wife coming up to work at 7 or 8 o'clock at night and bringing me dinner, spending some time with me, and leaving. It just... I did whatever it took. That's kind of like been my mantra. Whatever it takes, as much or as little as it takes to make it happen.
Mike Scoopin, if there's any professors from Brother Rice or Orchard Lake St. Mary listening right now, they're saying anything is possible that that guy did that. When we come back, we'll ask Mike Scoopin, what makes a great salesperson? And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Mike Scoopin, who in the last 8.5 years has talked to 8 million people, given over 2,000 speeches. Mike, what makes a great salesman?
You know, it's an interesting question because you get asked that a lot. And when you run 100 miles an hour all day, every day, and you just keep doing things the right way, that's a question that they've really discussed for a long time. And I just really believe you just do whatever it takes. You know, you work as many hours as you need to. You treat the customers right. You know, Zig, one of my mentors, said if you just help enough other people get what they want, you can have anything what you want. So it is serving people. It's serving people in the way that they want to be served. And we always think that it's got to be about me, but when it becomes about others, success just finds its way.
Mike, it's 2001. You have 3 children. How did Survivor 2 find you?
You know, I never watched the show. My kids watched the show. And I came home from work one day, and my son said, Dad, they have this show called Survivor. We think you'd be perfect for it. We want you to try out for it. They were on the 4th episode of the first Survivor show. And I didn't really know what it was. I had never seen it before. And it sat in my list of things to do pile until the last day of auditions for Survivor 2. I drove down to the Star Theater in Southfield, filled out an application. I turned it in. They said, where's your video? You have to do a 3-minute video. And I didn't bring one, but they brought a video camera for the one person that didn't know you had to do a video. I just shot from the hip, did a video, and the next thing I knew, they said, you're going to Australia. I didn't even know what it was. I knew it was an outdoor adventure, and you could win $1 million. And there I was, in the middle of the Australian outback, not even sure what to do. And really, nobody knew what to do because reality TV was brand new. If you wanted to watch a reality TV show, it was Survivor, and that was your only choice back then.
You come home that night, you say, honey, good news. Karen, I'm going to Australia. What did she say?
Disbelief. There was 67,000 people that applied for that show. And the process, the last interview was 10 days long in Santa Monica, California. It is the most grueling. They called me at 3 o'clock in the morning one time and said, we're going to be there in a half hour. You're going to meet Mark Burnett, the creator of this show, and he's going to make a decision on you. We'll be there in 5 minutes. So I jumped out of bed. I got ready, you know, brushed my teeth, and I didn't see anybody for a day and a half. I mean, it was a really interesting mind game that they played to see if you would crack under the pressure. But what a life-changing adventure.
Survivor 2 was the most watched TV show in history. The series is half over, and you are the favorite to win the $1 million final prize. Mike Scoopin, what happened?
I was the food gatherer. I'd sort of taken on that role. I was one of the only ones that had some outdoor experience, and I was catching fish and hunting wild boar, and I'd caught a couple of fish that day. And the fire that we had, we kept going 24/7. We used it to boil water. We used it to keep warm at night and to cook anything that we might have brought home that day. And I was trying to, it was just hot coals by that point, and I was trying to restart the fire, and I'd thrown some dried sticks and leaves on the fire, and I was blowing on the hot coals, and the smoke would get thicker and thicker, and suddenly as I inhaled to take another breath to blow on the fire, the wind changed directions, and I inhaled a big thick cloud of smoke. Now at this point I'm dehydrated, I'm malnutrition, sleep deprived, and I ended up passing out face first right into the middle of that fire pit. And last thing I remember is reaching my arms out to break my fall, and I passed out on the way down, so the weight of my body just buried my hands deep into the hot embers. And I laid there for about somewhere between 10 and 15 seconds just cooking in that fire. But I had this leather-brimmed hat, and it folded. I still today believe an angel folded that brim over my face, so my face was protected from being face first into those hot coals, and I was burned pretty severely, and I had to be helicoptered off to the number one burn center in Australia.
In preparation for the show, Mike Scoopin, I went back and looked at that video, that clip, 8 minutes, and at one point they show your face and they show your hands, and I mean your hands were awful, and your hands today literally are perfect. How?
I saw the five top burn surgeons in Australia. They flew in the five top burn surgeons, and they all evaluated my hands, and they said they had to have a series of 3 skin graft surgeries to repair my hands. My hands had swelled up to 3 or 4 times their normal size, and they had to wait for the swelling to go down before the first procedure. And throughout my adventure on Survivor, I'd really finally grasped faith. And I'll tell you, I prayed and I believed that I could be healed. I was reading a Reader's Digest article in the hospital that said faith and healing are inextricably linked. I still have that article. And on the 10th day, when Dr. Pogg, who's still the chief there, I understand, wheeled me into this holding room right before surgery, he took the bandages off my hands, and his exact words were, "That's impossible." He said, "What's happened to your hands is medically inexplainable." He said, "I've been the chief of surgery here for 35 years in the number one burn center in Australia, and I've never seen a burn heal like that on its own." And it took about a full year for my hands to fully recover, but he could see that the new skin was growing back by itself. And today my hands, I have all the feeling back. They said, "That's impossible." My fingernail beds were all burned off. They said I wouldn't have fingernails in my hands. I literally can't even callus them today.
Mike Scoopin, what's the biggest thing you learned from that Survivor series?
I think I learned, Jack, that faith is such an important part of your life. And I'd heard it from churches. I've heard it from my parents. I heard it from motivational speakers. They talk about a well-rounded person having a financial spoke, and like if it was a wheel, and you had a financial spoke, and an emotional spoke, and a family spoke, and a job spoke, and a friendship spoke. You have to be well-rounded. And they all talk about this spiritual spoke, and it seems like when you get so busy, the spiritual side is the first one to kind of go because it'll just be there waiting for me. But I, in the absence, see, on Survivor, whatever you share with anybody is going to be used against you when it comes down to the final vote. So you have to be really careful what you say. You really can't trust anybody. In the absence of having anybody to talk to, I just started talking to God. And I wasn't praying, I was strategizing, I was discussing, I was arguing, I was cutting deals, all of a sudden, you develop a friendship because you spend time. And I think this personal relationship with Jesus that the churches talk about today is simply the same thing as developing a friendship here on earth. Your best friendships are the people you spend the most time with. So I became friends with God, and I asked him for a favor, and he just said yes.
Survivor is now in its 19th season, two seasons a year. This whole reality TV, how do you explain that it's so successful?
I think part of it is, it costs about zero to produce. They don't pay the actors. There's not sets, and it's a pretty sparse setting as far as Hollywood goes. But I know that there are people that just cannot get enough of it. And I don't know if it's like they see themselves in that situation. People tell me that I was in their living room every Thursday night, and they came to know me and know my personality because we play ourselves. We don't play a fictitious role. You just play yourself, and they can't edit something into your mouth that you're not saying, so you just become yourself. And it's amazing, the letters and the mail and the emails I still get to this day. Hundreds of thousands of letters, and I've saved every one of them, and I've responded to every single person that's written me.
We're talking to Mike Scoopin, and I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Now, here's your host, Jack Crisula.
We're talking to Mike Scoopin, whose autobiography is entitled Fireproof. Mike, for the last 8.5 years, a huge chapter in your life has been giving speeches. 2,000 speeches, 600 churches, 8 million people. What's been the basic message?
Well, it depends where I am. And, you know, some people would call me a motivational speaker. I don't really think you can motivate somebody. I think it's bringing out what they already have inside of them that they've given up on or that has just laid dormant. And it's interesting. The first time I got asked to speak at a church, I got asked to talk about the healing of my hands. And I made it such a big deal about how God did something amazing in my life. And then as I walked out, I thought, well, what if God never did an amazing thing in their life? What did that message mean to them? It was entertaining, sure. But what I do, and what I talk about today, if somebody else ever said it or ever wrote it, I don't say it. I'm still motivated by life changes. If I can't impact somebody's life to do something different for the better, then I'm wasting my time. You know, if I came just to entertain you, you wasted your time, because everybody needs to get challenged to get better and do more, and for others and for themselves and their families. So I'm really big on life changes.
A number of doctors told you that the healing of your hands were a miracle. You talk a lot about miracles. Mike Scoopin, what is a miracle?
You know, I think that people, when they hear the word miracle, I've walked into churches of thousands of people, and there's big signs walking into the the chapel area that say "Expect a Miracle," and people walk by that giant sign every day. And when I ask the congregation how many people expect to have a miracle in their life, a handful of people out of 2,000 raise their hands. And I think that sometimes we look for the parting of the Red Sea's miracle, or the blind being able to see, or the lame being able to walk, and we miss out on all the little things that go on every day. The fact that you're running late for work and all the lights are green, or you narrowly avoided an accident and you say, "Wow, you're not going to believe what happened to me today." When you become aware of the things that happen in your life, the Bible says all good things come from God. So anything that's good comes from him. And these are little ways that he communicates with us. My friend Greg Swan said, "You have so many miracles that happen in your life. Would it be a miracle if a miracle didn't happen in your life in a day?" And absolutely. So if you just take notice of those little things, take notice to see the amazing things that happen in your life in spite of the troubles that you have, you'll see that miracles happen in everybody's life.
A little more than a week ago, you drove to Grand Rapids, Mike, and you spoke to a camp where all the kids were burn victims. So here this man comes who was burned, and miraculously his hands are okay. What did you say to those kids?
Boy, that was a life changer, Jack, because when I walked there, I wasn't prepared for the level of burn that these kids had. And from some of them from head to toe, missing things. And the world looks at these kids and they say they're different. The world tends to judge them from the outside. These people that volunteer at this camp don't even see the burns. They just see the insides of these kids. And I think we looked at anybody who has that's different, whatever disease or impairment that they might have, and we say, and we pity them, we say, "Wow, it must be," they're just regular kids. Inside, they're the same kids that you have in your house. They just want to be loved, they want to have fun, and they want to know somebody cares about them. And this camp, for a week, these people take a week out of their life, give up their only week vacation a year just to give to these kids. And some of them, it's the only love they might get in a year. And what a rewarding experience. These kids say in an instant, they can look in your eyes and see what kind of person, the character that you have on the inside. And I thought, wow, I wonder if when I see some kid in a wheelchair, or they don't call them burn victims, they call them burn survivors, which is part of the whole theme of the camp while I was there. And I know for a fact that I won't miss another year of this camp. It's been going on for decades, and I will never miss another year. And I will never look at a child or an adult that has any kind of difference that we see and not, with my eyes and probably also verbally, show them, "Hey, I'm with you. I'm judging your inside, not your outside."
I had a few months ago Nick Vujicic, who was born with no limbs, on the show, and he said, if you put a G and an O in front of disable, Mike, you get God is able. 2,000 speeches, Mike Scoopin. What have you learned by giving those 2,000 speeches?
Well, I prepare each speech I give, and I've given everything from, you know, schools with money, to the inner city schools, to alternative education schools where the kids weren't even welcome in schools anymore. I've gone to the jails and given speeches. And what you see is most of the times the people that you're speaking to that are in these unfortunate circumstances, nobody takes the time out them. No, nobody takes time out for them. My pastor preached a sermon, "The Haves Versus the Have-Nots." And I think the world's catered to the haves. Churches have catered to the haves because they have money to donate to keep the churches going. Who takes care of the have-nots? You know, it's a very small percentage of people. When Jesus walked this earth, he hung out with the have-nots. He didn't spend a moment with the haves. And I think that we have a whole priority problem in this world. If they're not like us, you know, if one of our neighbors is without a job, we'll make 100 phone calls for him. If there's a homeless person on the corner hanging up a sign, we don't even look his way because he might ask us for money. So I think we got a whole, it really helps you to every day be reminded that whatever you do to the least of my brothers, Jesus said in John, 1 John, if you say you love God, but you don't love all people, then you're a liar. And it reminds you, you got to love everybody.
We're talking to Mike Scoop, and when we come back, we'll ask him some specifics of some of these different topics of these 2,000 speeches. And I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Anything is possible with Jack Crisula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're talking to Mike Scoopin, who is a terrific example of God working miracle after miracle and God working in strange ways. Mike, let's talk about a few of the speeches. One that you give to children is Victory Over Addiction.
When I started looking at kids and the problems that they get into and the potential problems that I could have gotten into, you know, the world had this big thing called the war on drugs. And I think instead of attacking, we aren't successful. There's drugs. There's more drugs available than there in the history of mankind. So instead of attacking the supply, you got to attack the demand. So if we can get to the kids and let them empower them to say no, the pushers won't have anybody to talk to. So when I say it's not a war, I wanted the kids to claim victory over the ability to say no, the power to choose, the ability to look somebody in the eye and say, I'm not writing that into my story because I get to make the choices about how I want to live my life. And I travel, I've been to schools all over the world empowering kids that you can make those choices.
A statement that you make regularly in these talks is that many Christians have a flat tire spiritually.
God gave me this message one day right as I was kind of walking up to the pulpit to give a different talk. And what I see is I saw Christians like myself going to church every Sunday, and when you're in trouble, you'd pray a little bit and maybe you'd find some time to read the Bible every now and again. And instead of, the problem still existed and we'd complain about our problems. 90% of the people don't care about your problems and 10% of people are glad you have them. They're focusing on the wrong things. And I really believe that there's three or four key concepts of our spiritual walk that if you just have those, you know, we read books and we sing songs and we go to events and we attend church services and we read the Bible sporadically, but we still have, if we don't fix the key problem, and the flat tire is, you can tune up your car, you can polish it, you can put a new engine in it, but if you don't fix the flat tire, the car's never going to operate the way that it was designed to operate. And I think that the core concepts in Christianity are getting to know your Creator, which means spending time with God. The second part is forgiveness. You gotta forgive people. It's a commandment. Jesus doesn't give us an option. He says, if you forgive others, you can have my forgiveness, but if you don't forgive others, I won't forgive you. So that's such a key component. We retain bitterness and hatred and unforgiveness in our hearts. We gotta get that out. It's the biggest lie the devil ever told this world, that you need to stay mad because you didn't deserve it. So once I think we get those, and then it says in 1 John to love everyone. In that chapter, love is not a feeling. Love is just a choice. It's free will that God gave us, and He'll never take it away because He loves us so much. So if we understand those three concepts, I think spiritually we can make a much bigger impact on the world.
Speaking of love, you believe that above all things, love will change this world faster than anything else.
I remember I was fighting with my brother about coming to a family reunion, and he had some other priority, and I was ridiculing him by email, and I said, I can't believe you call yourself a part of this family. You've prioritized wrong, and I was fighting him on it and trying to muscle him into getting to this family reunion, and I got quiet, and I talked to God about it, and He said, you're not showing him love. Jesus didn't come to he came to fulfill the Old Testament when he came back here, and he showed us that love is above all. In Corinthians, it says, above faith, above anything, love is number one, above your faith. And so I said to my brother, I called him crying, and I said, I'm so sorry. You're the best brother I've ever had. You've made my life awesome. I love you to death, and I'll love you no matter what you say on this family reunion. And I accept the fact that you're not going to be there. I left it on his voicemail. A half hour later, he called me back, and he said, I'm coming. Love changes more than discipline, more than rules, more than regiment. You can change the heart of an entire community with love.
Mike Scoop, and anybody that listens to you says, wow, this guy's got a zest for life. How do I get that?
Wow. I think it comes, Jack, it goes back to, you know, Jesus came here to serve. And Zig Ziglar said, you can get anything you want if you just help enough other people. It's amazing what comes back to you. Some people say it's what goes around comes around. Whatever you want to call it, if it's faith or whatever your belief system is, this world has a way of you get involved in it, you help people, you become, you volunteer, you give back. You know, the Bible says you give, you get back 10 times. It's not giving back money. If you give back, if you give time, you get 10 times the time back. I really think that we need to take the focus off ourselves. Mothers all over are saying, when's it going to be about me? When we had children, it stopped being about us, and it started being about them, and it is about them until they don't need us anymore. And I think it's just a different way of looking at it.
We need positive people today, worse than ever. And it's harder to be a positive person, to be a motivated person in this negative, unmotivated world. Talk to the positive people about being positive today.
It's simply a choice. And I talk to people about, I always thought I grew up so poor that money was going to make me happy, or that more friends, or finally getting married, or having children, or having that perfect job, or that car you always wanted, that dream vacation. And each time I attained those things, it didn't make me any happier. So I realized it wasn't a person, a place, a thing, an event. I go to handicapped places and the kids are happier than ever, more happy than the actual people that we think are blessed. So I realized that happiness or being positive is simply just a choice. It's simply choosing it. And once you choose you're going to be happy, everything changes in your life. Just the way you look at it, you know, most of the world looks at it things straight on. I just take a step sideways and look at it a little bit differently. And boy, it's a lot. My brother says, or my sister says, I walk through the world with rose-colored glasses on. And I said, you know what? It's a really neat place to walk. You should try it sometime.
You're also very conscious of nutrition and exercise. You really watch what you eat at every meal. Talk to us about that.
You know, I think the older I get, I believe, and I study nutrition like a madman, I believe that 100% of disease is dietary. I believe that the foundation of what we put in our bodies from the time we're born to today makes up who we are. My 10-year-old reads labels in grocery store. My 7-year-old reads labels. When the snack mom comes and hands out the junk snacks after a baseball game, my 7-year-old read the label and said, no thanks, I can't eat this. They get it. They get that what you put into your body, it makes up who you are emotionally, physically, mentally, educationally. And I think it's time that we need to wake up. There's studies that show these brain disorders are a problem with cutting off brain flow into the brain area. I think people need to start saying it doesn't matter that it tastes great. It just matters that it's good for me. And when kids get fed this by their parents, I think it's a crime because they can't make that choice. We need to make it for them. And I could talk for hours on health and nutrition.
Your dad dies when you're 4. You're in the Hall of Fame at Brother Rice in Orchard Lake St. Mary's for the number of detentions. And 78,000 people, you're selected for Survivor 2. You've met presidents. You've been on every Today Show, Regis Kelly, etc. Why you, Mike Scoopin?
You know, Jack, nobody gave up on me. As much trouble as I got in and as much grief as I gave unintentionally parents and educators along the way, people loved me. And you know what? When kids go through these problems without love, they stay in the problems. I had people in my life. God kept people in my life that never quit on me. And because they never quit on me, I ended up not quitting on myself. And I would like to encourage anybody out there, don't quit on the people in your life. Don't quit on strangers that maybe got a bad rap or that didn't work as hard. We look at people and say, they could get a job. Why are they begging for food? They could be, there's jobs. Don't give up on people. Don't give up on them.
Cubs fans and Lions fans also? Last question. What advice, Mike Scoopin, would you give to our young listeners tonight?
The advice I think that I would give is, when I talk to first graders and elementary students and I ask them what they want to be when they grow up, they say, I want to be an astronaut and a rock star and a movie star and the president, and they have all these unbelievable dreams. When I ask that same question to high school students, they say, I'm just going to get a job and I'm not sure what I'm going to do. And somebody somewhere between elementary and high school took the dreams that those people had, and everybody has them, and they stepped on them. And they started saying, you're not good enough. You can't do it. And somewhere along the way, they started to believe it. We let other people write our stories. The impossible happens every single day. Your show's all about the impossible really becoming possible. We read about it, we believe it, we get inspired by it, but we think it's not for us. And I'm telling you, the impossible is for everybody. So whatever dream you have, whatever you wanted to do, whatever you wanted to achieve, if it's still inside you, don't let somebody else write your story. You are the creator of your life, and you can achieve anything you want. It is possible.
Mike Scoopin, we have to be God's arms and legs. You're doing that great. Thanks for doing that. Keep that up.
Thanks, Jack.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible.